The Reserve Pool, Episode 44, Top 10 Dragons. Roar. Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Reserve Pool, a podcast about Dice Masters and all of the people who love to play it. This is Dave.
And this is his wife, Lauren.
Yep, Lauren is joining me this week because, well, we had some scheduling issues and here she is.
Oh, this is my first podcast, too.
Ever.
Is nerve-wracking.
That's okay. You did your first YouTube videos ever with us, right?
Yes, that's true.
So there you go. You might be new to the podcast, but in your own way, you're a seasoned veteran of the Reserve Pool by now.
That's true, even though I'm a much more casual gamer.
You are, yeah. I mean, if I look at our game shelf here, there's definitely games that are very much yours and games that are very much mine, even though we play them all together.
Yep, absolutely.
We actually were just at a coffee shop tonight, and the coolest thing was that the place might make a game night a thing. We met some other gamers there, and they were playing a little bit of Magic, but it turned out that they're into more than just Magic.
Yeah, well, what was the game we overheard them talking about? Formula D, that was what it was.
Yeah, and we've played that. That's on our shelf right over there, and we've played that, and we like it. Certainly a great game. So, yeah, a game night might be a thing there because, well, one of those people works for that coffee shop. So, I don't know, we maybe can, like, kind of make a board game cafe in the back end there.
Yeah.
Or something.
It's a good idea. Oh, by the way, for those of you that were wondering, at the coffee shop, we brought a few games of our own. We played through Hanabi, and then most of the time, I was attempting to teach Dave. I read all the rule books for Tragedy Looper.
Yes. I will tell you what, this game is a bit of a brain burner, but once you start to go through, like, what you're supposed to think about during different parts of the game, then it's a bit easier.
Yeah, I really like the time traveling component of it too. It's just one of a kind.
Well, yeah, it's like Groundhog Day.
Very much so, which actually is a movie I have not seen.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Okay, so for those of you out there, there are a lot of movies that Lauren had not seen until we started dating. And I don't just mean like the sci-fi stuff that I'm into, though she hadn't seen any of Star Wars, which we rectified that pretty quick. And I also turned her into a Trekkie, but
yeah, and before we started dating, I was one of those people who kind of gotten the two mixed up every so often, and I feel really embarrassed even admitting that now.
You've come a long way.
I sure did.
You really have. Yeah, so one game we played there was Hanabi, and we gave this game a shot. We let it sit on the shelf for a while, and then we gave it another shot, and I mean, I don't think it's a game. I think it's just a really fun activity. Well, marginally fun activity.
I still give it a meh.
Yeah, how this won the Spiel des Jahres, I do not know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a family thing. It's not a... I hesitate to call it a game.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the whole aspect of you not knowing what your cards are. It's been done a couple times before.
It has?
There's one generic game at either Walmart or Target, but with letters.
Oh.
That you face the opposite way. I can't remember what it's called. But I think that's kind of the only other game that I know that does that. But it has been done before.
Well, I mean, a lot of these game mechanisms have been done before, right? I mean, what's Dice Masters but a mashing of Magic the Gathering and Quarriors? And what's Quarriors but a deck building game? And what's deck building but something that evolved from the CCG genre anyway? So, to an extent, everything's been done before, right? What has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Isn't that a...
Simpsons did it.
they probably did. Gosh knows they have enough history there. But so Hanabi, if you don't know, is a game where you are trying to construct a fireworks show. It is cooperative, and you're really just trying to beat your best score. So you have a hand of cards, and they're facing away from you, so you can give players information about their hand, but you can only be like, you have one card that's a one.
And you can point to it, yeah.
Or you have two cards that are twos, and you can point to which ones they are. Or you can tell them about the number that it is, or the color that it is. And then on your turn, you can either give information, play a card down, and you have to play them in sequence, one through five of each color. And once a color has been started, you can't start a new pile of that color. Or you can discard a card. And you're limited on how many hints that you can give. So there's a point where if you discard a card, you get a hint token back. But if you play something down and it doesn't fit anywhere, then you have to play a bomb token. And if you get, I think it's three, maybe four. It's
four, like four bad choices. And then
you lose the game.
Yeah.
And the whole goal is to see how many points you get. I mean, it's okay. It's not a game where you want or need perfect information, right? If you had perfect information, it'd be really boring. It's just like, oh, one, two, three, four, five. Okay, done with that one.
Yeah.
That would be pretty dumb. But I think it's just there's just a shade less information than you need. There's enough points in the game where I'm like, there is no possible way for me to make a reasonable choice. So I just have to, I don't know, discard this and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Or play this and maybe we get a bomb and maybe it magically fits somewhere. You're only supposed to give so much information, but I mean, you can kind of cheat within that.
About halfway through, we kind of started to get a little bored with it in some sense, and we started making faces to give more information. Oh, don't discard that card, and we make like a big frowny face and everything.
Or like, both of these are twos, and maybe point to one a little harder than the other. I mean, it's hard to really. Maybe we need more willpower to play that. I don't know, but I just
Yeah.
Meh.
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 So that is Hanabi. But
yes. We're not here though to talk about Hanabi.
Yes, this is the part where I usually say, but this is a Dice Masters podcast, folks. So let's talk about some Dice Masters. So first we'll check in with Randy, then maybe we'll hear about a basic action from yours truly. And then we have a feature topic today. Let's check it out.
Hey, what are you doing? Leave the microphone alone. Thank you. The Reserve Pool presents. There and back again. A look back at older Dice Masters characters and seeing how they fit into newer sets as they're released. Here's your host, Randy, and
Abigail.
And something exciting has happened since the last time we were with you. Someone had a birthday. Who had a birthday?
I did.
You did. And are you 3 years old?
No.
No? How old are you?
Four.
Are you so grown up now?
No.
Oh, you're not?
No.
Are you still little?
Yeah. Just a little bit little.
Who are we going to talk about today?
Nova.
Nova. Do you know his real name?
I don't know.
His real name? Richard Ryder. Do you know where he's from?
I don't know.
He grew up in Long Island, New York. What do you think about his helmet?
It's crazy.
It's crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nova made his first appearance in, believe it or not, Nova number one in September of 76. In 79, the character faded into obscurity and was all but forgotten. He returned in 1989 as a member of the teenage super team, the New Warriors.
I went to Nana's wedding when I was a little baby.
That has absolutely nothing to do with talking about Nova and the New Warriors and Dice Masters.
I didn't say that.
I know. You just wanted to tell everyone that you went to a wedding?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk more about Nova, okay?
Okay.
All right. After he returned in 89, he was a lifetime B-lister, maybe even a C-list hero. Didn't really do anything of significance until the Annihilation series in 2007. That changed everything. Richard Ryder was no longer one of many Nova Centurions drawing their power from the sentient Nova Force. The entire Nova home planet was destroyed, except for Richard Ryder. He was now the host of the entire Nova Force. Gaining the entire Nova Force immediately took him from obscure B-list hero to cosmic-level A-lister who single-handedly took down Annihilus during the Annihilation series. Spinning out of Annihilation was a new Nova series written by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning. The series ran 36 issues starting in 2007 and is one of my all-time favorite runs of comics. Through the series, Richard Rider constantly endeared himself to comic readers with his humble origins, good heart, constantly having incredible odds stacked against him. The heart of this story, even though it took the reader to brand new corners of the Marvel Universe, was just a young man from Long Island, New York, trying to do what's right in the face of those who wish to do wrong. Comic book stories don't get any more basic than that, and it was executed to perfection. Back to Dice Masters. The dice doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Nova's costume is blue, he has a gold helmet, he has a red burst symbol on his helmet, and the die is blue with that same helmet burst symbol, but in gray on the die. Nova has no gray anywhere on his costume. And the card art, it's representative of Nova. It's what his costume looked like pre-Annihilation, all through the origin in the 70s, and most of his appearances in the 90s and early 2000s. But it's just not the Nova that readers fell in love with during the post-Annihilation series. Now that we've got Nova's history out of the way, and we've talked a little bit about the die and the card art, let's jump into the cards themselves. The common, Nova, Quasar, 5-cost, Bold Energy. Each time Nova takes damage, you may draw one die and put it in your prep area. Early in AVX, before anything else was released, this Nova was a great option for churn in drafts. Because Beast Mutate 666 was not available in drafts, this Nova was one of the few ways to get extra die into your prep area. So this Nova was actually on a fair amount of constructed teams as well during the time that just AVX was released. Some of the other high-cost characters that we've talked about where PXG has made them more playable, PXG actually made this Nova obsolete. It took dice to your prep area with a global that was much cheaper than having to pay for this Nova to come in play and then having to try and get this Nova to take damage. It's just, the PXG is so much more efficient than just about anything else out there, and really made this this form of churn through Nova Quasar very, very outdated. The uncommon, 6-cost, Buckethead. The first time Nova takes damage each turn, you may redirect that damage to one target character. He wasn't great before, having that high cost. He is actually the most expensive of the three Novas, but now he's really not good. Before, with AVX, even Uncanny X-Men, there weren't a whole lot of ways to damage characters before the attack step. There were a few globals here and there. A lot of them cost 2 bolts to activate. There weren't a whole lot of ways to deal damage to a character before the attack step. You okay? So a lot of times, the first time Nova would take damage each turn would be during the attack step. If you could make sure he was engaged with another strong character, you could redirect all of that damage away from Nova and assassinate an opposing character that was giving you trouble. But now, especially with the Magic Missile basic action, it has the global to pay 1 bolt to do 1 damage to something. If you know that you're going to be damaging your opponent's Nova, you just hit him with the Magic Missile first to trigger that first time Nova takes damage each turn. Then you can damage him however you want for the rest of the turn, and he's really not useful anymore. He wasn't great before, but he's even worse now. But as is customary with this segment, we save the best for last. The rare, 5-cost, the Human Rocket. Whenever Nova takes damage in the attack step, he deals 2 damage to your opponent. Man, this is the exact opposite of Buckethead, where Buckethead is now rendered less useful with the Magic Missile basic action. The Human Rocket is so much more powerful with that basic action. Let's say we have Nova, the Human Rocket, in play, and one of the characters that we brought along on our team is Iceman, too cool for words. The one that has the global pay a bolt, and you can spin any number of sidekick dice to their bolt side. We also brought along Magic Missile basic action. Best case scenario, Nova's on his level 3 side, 7-7. We force him to attack. The opponent can declare blockers, do whatever they want, they declare blockers. That's fine. Now we can play globals. We can pay a bolt using Iceman's global to spin any number of our sidekick die to their bolt side. If, you know, we were able to use a little bit of churn, and let's just say we rolled, you know, we rolled 6 sidekick dice this turn. Pay 1 bolt to turn those other 5 sidekick dice to their bolt sides. We will now trigger the global on Magic Missile 5 times with the 5 bolts that we just got and damage our level 3 Nova all 5 times. So that's 10 damage you can deliver to your opponent before the attack step is over. I think D&D has really made a big change in what we will see in Construct. I think this Nova is the perfect example of why I'm doing this segment. We see with the common Quasar how much his usefulness changed with the release of Uncanny X-Men. Pretty useful in AVX, and now he is very, very not useful. The uncommon Buckethead, he was a little too expensive before, but now with D&D, he is even more useless. But then, the rare, the Human Rocket, has become very, very useful with the release of D&D. So this was our look back at Nova. If you have access to reading the 2007 Annihilation series, I highly recommend it. It got the character Nova and brought him to the forefront of the Marvel Universe for a few years. That series, Annihilation, is also what kickstarted the Guardians of the Galaxy series that launched at the same time. So if you're a fan of the Guardians of the Galaxy, I highly recommend go back, read Annihilation. You'll fall in love with Nova. Look for the trade paperbacks of his series. It is honestly one of the best runs I have ever read. Maybe there was a little too much comic talk on this segment. Meh, so be it. We're talking about comic book characters in some of these, so it's going to happen. This has been Randy and
Abigail
talking about
Nova.
I hope you enjoyed this segment. Back to you guys.
Bye-bye.
This is Taking Action, a periodic look at how to get the most out of your basic and non-basic action cards. Today, we're going to look at a basic action that has most certainly been the talk of the Dungeons & Dragons set. I'm talking, of course, about Magic Missile. Magic Missile is, of course, one of those iconic mage spells from Dungeons & Dragons, and it was undoubtedly going to make an appearance here. Magic Missile is known for having split projectiles, and really, if you're a fan of the Penny Arcade and Will Wheaton and Acquisitions Incorporated, then, or of course Dungeons & Dragons, then you're very familiar with Magic Missile, specifically the Jim's Magic Missile variety for Jim Dark Magic. In any case, Magic Missile costs 3, and its text reads, deal 2 damage to target character or player. Now, if it ended there, we'd basically have Power Bolt, but it continues. On its double burst face, deal extra damage to a character equal to the level of your highest level adventurer in the field. So now we have some removal here on double burst, but there's more. It has a global. Pay Bolt. Deal 1 damage to a character. And again, with some removal, all you need are some bolts. Well, I like this in so many different ways, both inside and outside of the set. Inside the set, this could pair well with Breath Weapon. You have done some damage with the Breath Weapon. You can take advantage of this global during the time of the attack phase when you can play globals to get something else off of the board. Or, for example, removal before the attack step so that something can't block. Wonderful. This also pairs very well with something like Iceman. Now, we've seen this global before. It's the exact same global from Slifer the Sky Dragon, the rare version, but now it's on a basic action card, which means that you can see it a lot easier, and you're going to see it in the D&D set just in draft. This is a great way to deal with those pesky NPCs. Again, as I started to say, it works well with Iceman, right? The global where you can pay a bolt to roll all of your sidekicks to bolts. You can knock out a whole lot of stuff here. I like it a lot. It's Power Bolt, but better. The big thing is that we have a lot of ways to control the costs of basic action cards now. It's very easy to purchase a Magic Missile for 1. The drawback now in the past with basic actions, the drawback was, well, I don't know if I really want to buy this. And you would bring basic action cards that you were certain that your opponent didn't want to buy because you didn't want to buy it either and you didn't want to bring something that was accidentally useful. But now it's going to be a lot easier to bring things that are accidentally useful. This basic action Magic Missile is something that both players could surely want. Surely the global will be a double-edged sword, as they should be. But if your deck relies on this, and a lot of them might, with all of the action cost fixing and, you know, between Elf Wizard and Red Dragon and all those sorts of things, you're going to want to make sure you buy them early, or you're not going to want to bring it at all. This card is awesome. I like that it splits damage. It's very thematic in that way.
It costs just 3. Really easily could have made this cost 4. Powerbolt, remember, costed also 3, even though it only had the 2 damage to target character or play the ability. So we have removal times 2, and really times 2.5, we'll say, with the global. That is Magic Missile, and this has been Taking Action. Back to the show. As different as they are, the Dungeons & Dragons set and Yu-Gi-Oh! Set have something in common, and that thing is dragons. Those things are dragons? Something like that. Dragons. The Here Thar Be Dragons. And that's awesome. Dragons are one of my favorite part of fantasy stories. They've always captured my imagination from the first time I encountered the dragon Smaug in The Hobbit all the way through my absolute adoration of the Dragonlance series, which gets progressively better written the longer that Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman penned it. But dragons always captured me. And now we have some interesting ways for dragons to interact, as we saw with Randy's deck, but we just have a whole bunch of different dragons and so many different ways to use them.
Yeah, and whenever you asked me to join you in the podcast, I was like, well, what do we talk about? And after discussion, I was like, we need to make a list. I love to make lists.
Yeah, so we went through a couple of ideas, and then Randy on our Skype chat said, you know, my wife and I could do one about dragons. Mm-hmm. Because we were trying to think, like Lauren, his wife is aware of the game and everything, but doesn't have like the same working knowledge of all these cards that the rest of us working on the site will. She leaves that to me, and I tell her what works and what doesn't sometimes. Yeah. But
and I listen for the most part.
For the most part, you know, no, she's a pretty good playtest opponent, and she, despite what you may see on the YouTube video, she does beat me from time to time.
Yeah, I would like to get that documented though, actually, one time.
Well,
it's coming.
Yeah, well, you were darn close. You were darn close with the last one.
Yeah.
Until I managed to get some combat tricks in my favor and get that Tarrasque out.
Mm-hmm.
Hoo-ha.
Yeah.
Tarrasque is awesome. So, that said,
back to the topic of dragons.
Yes.
By the way, you ranted about how you love dragons. You didn't give me a chance to rant about dragons.
Well, I'm the intro guy.
Oh, okay. Oh, Mr. Hyde, mighty intro guy. Well, I have to at least add, though, as a teacher, I think all kids go through, I think, at least 3 different phases. There's the dinosaur phase, where they're absolutely obsessed with, especially the T-Rex. They go through the car phase. Anything, big trucks, big wheels, yeah, awesome. And then I think they always go through, at one point, a dragon phase.
All kids?
All kids.
Even the little girls?
I think so.
I mean, you being a girl would know that, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. And some of them never grow out of it. I still have high school students who can go on and on about mostly dinosaurs, actually.
Well, I'm looking at our game shelf, and I see the D&D Wrath of Ashardalon game. I see Formula D with all the cars in it. I see all these superhero things we have.
Yeah, King of Tokyo.
See Rune Wars.
Yeah.
I see a whole bunch of D&D and Pathfinder stuff. I don't think we grew out of it either, honey.
No.
No. All right, so without further ado, let's bring you top 10 dragons.
Rawr.
Number 10, for me, is the Baby Dragon Common. Now, this is a 3-bolt character, and it has no text whatsoever on it. Just 3-bolt, decent stats. This is, outside of AVX, this is the cheapest bolt characters get for us, and this is also the cheapest dragon. It can do a whole lot to feed different abilities, including the combination with Time Wizard for the 1000 Dragon Fusion, but on its own, it's a solid dragon, pairs well with abilities that things like Lord of D, or Half Dragon, or some of the other dragons have. Baby Dragon Common is my number 10.
All right, and my number 10 is Red Eyes Black Dragon. It's a 6-cost bolt character.
Yeah, which version is this?
It is the Inferno Fire Blast. So this is 6 Bolt, and there is a little bit of subtext. It reads, when this monster attacks, knock out all sidekicks for both players. This monster gets a +2 attack for each sidekick knocked out of it in its way. And I really like this because if both sides are really racking up on sidekicks, clear them, and then if you're able to block out all the other characters from the other side, the lowest level is a 5 attack, the highest level is a 7 attack. And I like that a lot.
Yeah. Well, you get +2 for each sidekick knocked out in this way. Yeah.
From both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could do that. You could really build up to this with a basic action card like Rally or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It works. I've yet to see it pulled off, but I haven't gotten to play with this a lot. Maybe this will be something worthwhile now that we have some price fixing for dragons and whatnot. Yeah, yeah. Cool. And
this also made my list, too, because the dice is just cool looking. I mean, who doesn't like the combination of red and black?
Yeah. Oh, well, this is the kind of that gunmetal gray, right? This is one of the pearlescent dice. Though, as I recall, there is a die in, I believe it's the Tarrasc die in D&D, looks very, very similar. And it also happens to be one of my favorite dice in D&D, so mm-hmm. There you are. All right. My number 9 is Slifer the Sky Dragon Lightning Blast. This is the rare version, of course, from the Yu-Gi-Oh! Set. It's one of the Egyptian gods. And this is a 7-bolt character. It has a total fielding cost of 6, so on the expensive side. But on its attack stats, it bottoms out at 7, tops out at 10. And it has a global ability, very simple. Pay bolt to deal 1 damage to target monster. Of course, monster character interchangeable. What an awesome card. I love this global. The cost is not too terrible, right? You know, 7 is on the edge of doable. Certainly, Randy just talked about the way to get 9 dice in a recent article here. 9 energy, rather, not dice. 7 is doable, and, you know, he's more expensive on his other faces. But I like the global a whole lot. I'd rather have the global probably than something like when summoned, you may pay 1 life to spin a die up 1 level. His super rare is awesome, and I wish I do kind of wish I had that. But for the global, Slifer rare just really gets it for me.
That's pretty cool. And you said it tops out at 10. Is that the highest top out then of any card in any of the sets?
Oh, boy, I think that may be the highest attack stat that we see on anything. I think you might be right.
Mm-hmm. Very cool, though. Shall we go on with my number 9, then?
You are number 9.
Okay, my number 9.
Number 9? It's a Beatles song.
Yes, I get it.
Thank you.
It is a Green Dragon, Minion Dragon. This is a 4-fist character. I am all about the small cost characters. And this one has something very simple, the Breath Weapon 1. Pay 1 to deal 1 damage to your opponent and all his creatures. It's a little lower on my list because I think there's a better card that does this later on that I'll talk about. But overall, a low-cost card.
Yeah, all the dragons have Breath Weapon in D&D to some extent. Breath Weapon 1 is perfectly fine. 4 Fist, this is your cheap dragon option if you want to do something with fists and also desperately want a dragon.
Also, I have a question about the artwork on Green Dragon. What is the thing in front of the green dragon?
That is a human warrior with a shield. You can see
his
shield, his sword. Yeah.
Oh, I see it
That's
now.
That's what it is. So you have to look closely, but yeah.
It's a little dark.
It is, but this D&D 5 art is very gritty. They went back, we've talked about this before on the podcast, but they went back to a degree of realism. As much realism as you're going to get in fantasy, but gone are the days of the chainmail bikinis and the swords that are as tall as me. I'm 6'4".
Right.
And we have, you know, these actual people. The art is a little darker, a little grittier. I like what they're going for here, and certainly the Green Dragon artwork is up there with some of my favorite.
Absolutely. Can I make a silly comment, though?
Oh, sure.
I asked about the figure in front of the Green Dragon because from far away, it kind of looks maybe like a dodo bird.
It does. I can see it.
Because it's or so like dark.
Like the top of an octopus or squid, I guess.
Yeah, with the shield and the arm kind of dividing. Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. My number 8 is higher up on Lauren's list, so I will simply wait for Lauren to get to it.
Fair enough. All right. My number 8 is the 1,000 Dragon. Oh, this is going to be like a tongue twister. Noxious Nostril Gust.
Close enough.
Yes.
Yeah, this is, what, 6-bolt?
Yep, this is the rare. And I mainly picked it because of the global.
Okay, yeah, I mean, it has fusion. We know how that works with Thousand Dragon. We don't have to read all that, but right. Tell us about this global.
The global says, pay a lightning bolt. The next action die you buy this turn costs 2 less energy. For me, I've found the way I play, I do like to buy action dice.
You know,
early on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the more I'm looking at the D&D set and putting the Yu-Gi-Oh! Set in context of D&D, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh! Got criticized early on because the play was a little bit slower, but you know what? With stuff like the Blue Eyes White Dragon and the globals like that one and like the one we find here, we actually have a lot of similarities to D&D, and we love D&D, and generally the reception has been very positive. Well, D&D has a lot of the same pace. Now, we perhaps have some better basic actions to use just within set that synergize really well with some of this, but at the same time, Yu-Gi-Oh! And D&D are very much cut from the same cloth in terms of energy manipulation. There isn't the same kind of churn that we've had in past sets with B666 or the Professor X Global, but there are the same discount pricing, and we see it right here with Thousand Dragon. Good eye.
Thank you.
Absolutely, and maybe part of it is that Yu-Gi-Oh! Doesn't have that kind of like Power Bolt card or Magic Missile sort of thing. I just talked about that in an earlier segment. I'm already forgetting it. Magic Missile sort of thing that does damage, but its basic actions are controlling and have some very interesting long game implications. So I'll be curious to see long term how some of those more controlling basic actions and non-basic actions with the ring and the rod and the scepter and those sorts of things from Yu-Gi-Oh! End up fitting in, because I suspect some really interesting things are possible that may actually finally give us a deck that can survive and thrive in a true long game scenario. All right, I've said enough. Let's move on to number 7. And my number 7 is the Green Dragon Lesser Dragon. This is the non-starter set version of Green Dragon. This one costs 5 fist. It has Breath Weapon 1. It is, of course, an evil monster. Breath Weapon 1. And characters damaged by this Breath Weapon cannot block. Your opponent may prevent this by paying 1 life. I like this on the set review, and I like it still. I think this is a pretty neat card. Breath Weapon 1 means you're getting 1 damage through to everything and your opponent. Anything that's still standing, you know, anything that's not a chump blocker, now can't block unless your opponent plays 1 life. So you've at least cleared out the chumps. You've done 1 damage to your opponent, and they're probably going to end up paying 1 more life so that they can block. That's perfect. I mean, if they don't pay a life, it's because they can't, and you probably win. If they do pay a life, now you've gotten rid of chumps. You maybe can take advantage of that by using your magic helmet, where you know, you need at least 2 characters to block something. And
every time you
like
say
that.
Magic helmet, all I think is the Bugs Bunny.
Yeah,
Jay.
I can't get it out of my. Absolutely have. Yeah, and it's funny you bring that up. That this is why we're married. But in any case, yeah, use that for some of your blocker control. It's just a great card, and I think it combos really well with some other things. So, yeah, the Green Dragon Lesser Dragon gets my pick there. I know you liked the Minion, but Lesser is way cooler for me.
Okay, fair enough. My number 7, I can't talk about number 7 because it is higher up on your list.
It sure is. All right, coming in at number 6 is the Thousand Dragon Common. This is Uncommon, rather. This is the Inferno Flame Breath Thousand Dragon from the Yu-Gi-Oh! Set. It costs 6. It has the fusion thing as well. 6-bolt has the fusion thing. And when summoned, put 2 dice from your bag to your prep area. So prep 2. That's perfect, because Thousand Dragon has a total fielding cost of 1. If you have a way of getting this dragon out for a cheap price, you can easily cycle him through to continue prepping dice. Once again, who said Yu-Gi-Oh! Doesn't have churn? And total fielding cost of 1. Can we talk about the fact that he goes 4-4-6-5-7-6? I mean, this is just a solid die for that price. And 6-bolt is not that expensive when you have things like Blue Eyes, Red Eyes Black Dragon, Half Dragon, all these things changing the way that your dragons cost you energy. This is an easy one to take care of. Thousand Dragon, Uncommon.
Excellent. And my number six is Red Dragon Lesser Dragon from the D&D set. It is a 7-bolt character.
This is the uncommon?
And it is the common.
It is, okay.
Yes, and once again, as I said earlier, I'm all about buying basic action die early on. And Red Dragon's global is once per turn, pay a bolt. When you purchase your next action die this turn, it costs 2 less, minimum of 1, and you deal 1 damage to your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
So on top of paying less for the action die, always doing 1 damage to your opponent, I think that's a big plus. And of course, there's subtext on this too with Breath Weapon of 2. And it's a field drag, Red Dragon for free if your opponent has 2 or more non-NPC characters in the field.
Right. The NPCs in D&D, of course, being the sidekicks. This was also on my list. This was my number 8 that I had to skip over. Yeah, I really like this one. And I'll tell you what, I am split between it and the uncommon. The uncommon replaces the fielding for free with the pay 2 life to use the breath weapon for free, because there are points in the game where you can use your life as a resource. So I like that. But this one's probably a little bit better. The fact that you can field him for free in that sort of scenario actually makes him a card that can help you when you're losing. The global ability that he shares with all of his iterations is just a no-brainer for all of the crazy actions that we have going on. That's fantastic. And the fact that it does damage as well as purchasing stuff. It lets you do all these things. So how about a global that's pay a bolt, do a damage to your opponent? That's wonderful. So here we get a global that's pay a bolt, saves you 2 energy, and does a damage. That's a great return on your investment in a very fair way. Yeah, so that was my number 8 as well. All right then, I guess that takes us to number 5.
Correct.
So my number 5 is Blue Dragon, Lesser Dragon. This is, again, the non-starter version of Blue Dragon. It is a 4-bolt character, an evil monster. And it has awesome artwork where lightning is crackling out of its mouth because the Blue Dragon has the lightning breath. Though I've seen Blue Dragons in Dragonlance have frost-related things, but I digress. This has Breath Weapon 1. We know what that does. While active, whenever you use an action die's ability, deal 1 damage to all characters. Well, that's pretty cool. You use an action die the right way, or a couple of them, you could easily sweep the board on the other side, leaving a couple of your bigger things to go through to clean up. Right, Blue Dragon tops out at 6-6, so on his own, you're already attacking with him if you're using the breath weapon. So on his own, whatever you do with this, plus with through the action dice, plus pay for the breath weapon, then attack with him. You're basically, because of breath weapon, adding a damage to your opponent. Maybe he gets through. I like it a lot. It's another bolt dragon. It's not that expensive at 4. We don't get very much cheaper with bolts except for a 3 here or there. I like this one a lot.
And after you just talked about it, I kind of regret not putting this one on my list because it's like all the things I love in a card. It's a low purchase cost. It's all about action dice. It's a cool graphic, cool dice, and I regret it a little bit.
Well, you didn't make a horrible choice, but we'll talk about... You did pick a Blue Dragon, spoiler alert, but we're not going to talk...
Oh, you gave it away!
We won't talk about which one until a little bit later, so... Lauren, tell us about your number 5.
Well, I can't tell you about my number 5 because once again, you copycat, you stole my card.
Yeah, I just like it. I like it better than you. Yeah. All right, number 4. I have Red Eyes Black Dragon, Plated Dragon.
Whoa. Is that the same as mine?
Why, I guess it is. Yeah, it looks like our number 4 matches up exactly. We both have this one, so I'll read it here. We have 6-bolt. While active, bolt monsters cost 2 energy less for you to buy and has a burst. When summoned, move 1 die from your opponent's prep area into the used pile. Okay, so it's a little more expensive to summon, right? It has a total fielding cost of 6. But if you keep it out in the field, I'm not necessarily attacking a whole lot with this, though it can attack, and I don't want to cycle it to take advantage of that burst ability. That's only on one face anyway.
Yeah.
I like the fact that it's making my bolt monsters cost 2 energy less. That is very powerful, and while he does cost 6, We've already talked about the ways to change the cost of dragons and other cards. Blue Eyes Global will do it. So will some of the other cards' active abilities. You can get him out for not much, and he's giving you a permanent discount. And depending on what you're able to do with your dragons, he forces your opponent to deal with him instead of perhaps doing something else that they wanted to do a little bit more.
Yep, and I think almost all of my dragons, except for maybe one or two, are Bolt. So it just makes sense.
Yeah, there are a few Mask dragons. There are a few Fist dragons. Yep. But for the most part, we have Bolts. Bolts with our dragons. So yes. No, let's pause, though, to say that I agree that most dragons should be Bolt. However, there's a couple of things that always attracted me to dragons. It's the fact that, unlike many other, we'll say, mythical beasts, they're always portrayed as intelligent, right? There's stuff happening there. They are very smart creatures. They are very cunning. They can be very greedy. You know, the different aspects have different things that they do. They can take on human form. That's common to a lot of different kinds of fantasy, but they can be very cunning. They can have brute strength. All right. They're huge and very muscular. But of course they also have those crazy breath weapons and whatever else to get you as well. So I think dragons just hit everywhere. And I like the fact that, you know, we have masks, we have fists, we have both. We don't really have a shield dragon unless is.
No, we don't.
But maybe that's coming somewhere. Maybe. I could see it.
I could.
Maybe if we get Lord of the like a Lord of the Rings or Hobbit Dice Masters, Smaug could be a shield because he was very well armored with his scales were very hard. Right? Except for that one spot that yes. That Bard found him.
Like the Death Star?
Yeah. Yeah, Smaug was great except for that exhaust port that the that they left uncovered.
Yep.
All right. Good enough. So, yes, we both had the same exact number 4, Red Eyes, Black Dragon, the plated variety of him.
Now on to top 3.
Top 3. All right. My number 3 is... also, Lauren's number 7, and this is the rare Dracolich. This is a 7 mask character. There's a mask dragon. It's an evil monster. Paragon undead dragon we have here. Breath weapon 3, which is an incredibly powerful breath weapon, though you'll pay for it. While active, your opponent takes 1 damage each time either player rolls, but not rerolls, an action die. Well, within D&D... this is awesome. Outside of D&D, because actions are sure to become a stronger part of the game, this is also awesome. You hurt your opponent for doing something they want to do. This is good on its own if you are using actions. This is super good if you and your opponent are both using actions. Like, crazy. Because now you're penalizing them for doing something they want to do. It's a way of giving yourself some inevitability. Now, once again, you're paying for him, but obligatory mm-hmm. statement about discount dragons.
Mm-hmm. And I love cards that have something that affects both sides of the field.
Yeah, it makes the game more interesting. In one sense, global abilities do that because they're available to both players. But in this sense, his ability does that because, well, your opponent's getting hurt for doing things that they want and perhaps even need to do. They have to pay that one life penalty.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, do you get like a Cubone vibe from the artwork a little bit? I personally do a little.
Actually,
just a little bit.
What I have been saying is that this is the good art version of Curse of Dragon from Yu-Gi-Oh!
Oh, I see it.
They're in a very similar pose.
Yeah.
Dracolich is a little bigger. We can't see his tail. But they're in a very similar pose. They're kind of bony and whatever else. That's been my story here. I don't know. I happen to like both cards, so maybe mm-hmm. there's something to it. Though, now that I look of it, Curse didn't make my list. He was probably his rare was my number 11, but that's neither here nor there. So yeah, Lauren, why was that your number 7? Basically, because you said affects both players, etc.
Exactly. Yeah. I've always been drawn to cards like that.
Cool.
All right, we got to talk about my number 3 now.
Let's.
My turn, not yours. Mine. I have for my number 3 Blue Eyes White Dragon Blue Titan. It's common. It is a 6 Bolt character, and it's all about those bursts. About those bursts.
Oh, no.
if you get a single burst on level 1 or 2, when this monster attacks, your opponent knocks out one of his or her monsters. And if you roll the level 3 side, double burst, when this monster attacks, your opponent loses life equal to the level of his or her highest level monster.
Well, so, a maximum of 3.
Maximum of 3. I actually almost prefer the single burst, which mm-hmm. is 2 out of 3 character sides.
Right. Well, you know, the thing that I actually don't like that much about this card is, first, your opponent gets to choose who they're knocking out. So your opponent knocks out one of his or her. So your opponent gets to pick, and they're going to pick mm-hmm. whatever is most favorable for them. It, like, for example, if we're playing cross set, and I'm your opponent, and you play that on me, I'm picking Storm Windrider, because now I know I'm rolling her again next turn, and I'm forcing you to re-roll and maybe doing some damage to you. Like, that's the drawback there. And the double burst is better, but so you pay 3 energy to field him, and you get a decent character, and then you pay for this, which is going to do a maximum of 3 damage. That's its best-case scenario. Its average-case scenario is 2, so you're paying 3 for an 8-7 creature and an average case of 2 damage. That's probably about worth it, but that's 1 of 6 faces. I'm a little cooler on this one than you.
Yeah, this one you would definitely have to do some prepping beforehand. Maybe you'd have to use a global or something to knock out a few characters before Blue Eyes White Dragon attacks. So maybe it's a little more trouble than it's worth, but it also made up so high on the list because just the dice is so beautiful.
Well,
so
sure it is.
I've taken that into account, too.
But then I have to ask why my number 2 and your number 5, the Blue Eyes White Dragon Rare, was rated below the Blue Eyes White Dragon Common for you.
I don't know. I'm second-guessing myself now, and I'm going to cry after this podcast.
No, you're not. It's okay.
Okay.
All right. Yes, so my number 2 is the Blue Eyes White Dragon Rare. This is Monstrous Dragon, 7-bolt. And this guy is just awesome. For one, as she said, the die is pretty good, pretty darn cool. But we have a couple of helpful abilities here. The first is a character ability. Once per turn, you may knock out one of your monsters to give this monster +3 attack. There are a lot of characters we'd say, well, this is good, but it's hard to knock out to trigger its ability because it has too much defense. We need something that lets us knock it out. Well, how about this one? Then we also have the global, which also gives us maybe an even cheaper way of knocking something out like that. Pay bolt and knock out one of your monsters to reduce the cost of the next die you buy by 2 energy. Again, who said there was no churn here? Do this, and you can buy a whole lot of things. Things that were 7 cost now become 5. That's so attainable. Now, of course, you're spending a bolt to do it, so you need to have 6 energy, and you need to have something in the field. But whatever you're knocking out goes to prep. Or perhaps your later game, and you're using this global with Tarrasque. Now he regenerates, he does damage, and that is pretty darn awesome. The Blue Eyes Global lets a lot of interesting things happen. It's a pretty cool die on its own. It's powerful enough. If you knock out one of your monsters, you're taking him from a attack range 6 through 8 to 9 through 11. I'll take it. Blue Eyes White Dragon Rare is my number 2. Why was that your number 5, Lauren?
Oh, it was my number 5.
That's what I'm saying. Why was it lower than the common?
I don't know. Because you talked it up really well.
That's my
job. Can I switch them?
Yes.
Okay.
Lauren, this was Lauren's number 3.
Yay.
Blue Eyes White Dragon. All right. Tell us about your number 2.
All right. My number 2 is Yu-Gi-Oh's Baby Dragon, Cute But Dangerous.
Oh, of course you would pick
rare.
That.
Oh, yeah, it just makes sense. This is a 4-bolt character, and I'm all about the low-cost cards, getting them out early. And this one is, when this monster attacks, it gains +1 attack for each other bolt monster you control. So if you have, and as we established before, a ton of other monsters that are bolt characters, especially
right.
dragons, and we're in the process of controlling them, it just makes sense. And on its highest level, this is an attack of 4, so add +1 attack for all the other characters. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty happy with this one.
Yeah, the one drawback, of course, is that because we're talking about how many we have, it's how many unique versions. So if you had, say, mm-hmm. 3 baby dragons out, you're not getting anything additional because there aren't other bolt monsters, there's only baby dragons. So we would need to have other things out there. Perhaps you could use a few of the other cheap bolt characters that you have, like the two cost Human Torch from AVX, which doesn't have a whole lot going for it other than the fact that it's two cost. The two cost Ghost Rider, excuse me, that card gives me indigestion, which is a good fact that it's two cost bolt, but is a little too expensive to field. Or, you know, Scarlet Witch. It's common, which that rules out because it's already baby dragon. I don't know. But, that card has some interesting applications. I don't think it's been used to its full potential yet, but, it's four bolt with a not awful ability. If you're playing bolts, this might be worth including.
Yep. That's what I considered.
Sure. All right. My number one is the... Okay, I have to laugh because my prediction, this still is probably going to be true, but my prediction was that this card was going to be highly overrated, and here I am. My number one is the Red Dragon, Epic Dragon. This is the super rare from D&D. It is a 7-bolt character. If you listen to the set review, you know I am super, super high on this one. I think it was one of the few 5s that we gave out. If I'm drafting and I get this card coming up, I don't even care about rarity. Yes, it's a rare card. Yes, it's going to sell for something. I don't care about that. I care about the fact that this is what I can build a team around in this set. So, we have Breath Weapon 3. We have while active, once per turn, when you use an action die effect, you may use a second copy of its effect. I think of a couple of cards already that we would combine that, right? What about the dragon that does damage every time you use an action die effect? Whew, crazy. Then we have the global, which is the same Red Dragon global. So he's getting those basic actions for a cheaper price. We have the means to get him for much less than 7 energy. We just do. It's in the game. You don't even have to stray from the D&D set to make it work. You could do it in draft. It's worth it. If you can get up to it, it's worth it. This card is awesome. I love the artwork. I know it's a Red Dragon, and I know that we're talking Faerun, which is Forgotten Realms, but looking at it reminds me in some ways of, I think it's the Chaos. Hang on. I got Dragons of Summer Flame right here. Looking at it makes me think of the Dragon Chaos from a little bit from D&D, from the Dragonlance thing, except that Chaos is a little more like cracked rock with magma going through. This is just a big, beastly, monstrous, crazy dragon, and yeah. I love it. This is one of my favorite cards in the entire set, and I really wish I had one.
You hypocrite.
I am.
And you're proudly admitting it, too.
I am.
All right. We are now to my number one. And my number one is Blue Dragon, Apprentice Dragon. This is actually
a starter dragon. Yeah, it's a starter dragon.
It's a starter dragon too. Go figure. But
yeah, this is a bit of an unconventional choice, so I'm going to grill you on this one.
Oh no. And then I'm going to regret it, and then I'm going to cry again for a second time after this podcast is over.
She's just saying that. She doesn't actually cry that much.
Yeah, but I will. Just watch me.
I probably cry more than she does.
And which is why I married you.
Okay. Sure.
That didn't make any Moving sense. Moving on. Never mind. So anyway, this blue dragon is a 4-bolt character.
Right.
I love the cheapness of its purchase. Breath Weapon 1, we know what it does. And the other text says, while active, whenever you use an action die's ability, which I do a lot, choose an opposing character. That character can't block this turn.
Mm-hmm.
I love keeping my opponent, or giving that my opponent that ability of, oh, nope, actually that character, you can't block this turn.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of blocker control. And if you're using an action die multiple times, an action die's ability multiple times, say through a, I don't know, super rare red dragon, just spitballing here, you can do this multiple times. This does not limit you to once per turn. So if I'm using that action die's effect, right, I'm using that action die's ability twice. Now, I can only do that once per turn with the red dragon, but I'm still using the ability two different times per red dragon. So if I have that, I get to pick two things that can't block. Maybe I'm also using the Minotaur. I have the Spear and Magic Helmet. Anyway.
So you're pretty much saying that your number one pick and my number one pick would be like best buddies. I would totally watch a sitcom of Red Dragon and Blue Dragon.
I don't think I'd watch that sitcom. I'm sorry. I would do a lot of things. I don't know if I'd watch that sitcom.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm trying to imagine a sitcom with dragons and what the heck kind of niche market that would be for.
Oh, you remember the old, was it a 90s show, Dinosaurs? I feel like it'd be like maybe similar to that.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, but the Dinosaurs was a whole bunch of sitcom stereotypes rolled into having dinosaurs. I don't know. I don't want to knock that show. It was funny enough at times. All I really remember about it is that knock the mama from the little baby.
Yes.
I didn't watch the show a whole lot.
Fair enough. And to add, by the way, Blue Dragon is also my number one just because like it breathes lightning and the dice. It's just a beautiful bold shade of blue. I love it.
I think this has a place in Constructed. I went with the lesser dragon because, one, well, it'll come up in draft, right? That was my number five. It will come up in draft. Two, its ability, well, that's the one, right? We said that deals damage, if I'm thinking back, right? I have short-term memory loss, apparently. I believe the blue dragon, lesser dragon, is the one that deals damage. So it is very similar. Yeah, damage to all characters. And I like the damage to characters a little bit more. However, if I'm preventing something from blocking, then maybe I'm getting some damage through to my opponent. Mm-hmm. And that's always awesome, too. That is how we win the game. I like to try to clear the field a little more, which is why I like the lesser dragon. Whereas, I guess you want a little bit more of a controlling approach. Interesting that a card that is blue deals with annoying control aspects to the game. I'm looking at you, Magic the Gathering.
What?
Yeah. All right, so those are our favorite dragons, at least for the moment. Surely there will be future D&D sets and Yu-Gi-Oh! Sets. And I really have to say, one, if you haven't got D&D, get this set. It is the best set that they have put out so far, bar none. This is not hyperbole, anything. This is a fantastic looking, feeling, playing set. I just dropped a whole bunch of cards. We'll pick those up later. This is a fantastic set. The other thing that I will say is that if you pass Yu-Gi-Oh! Up, give it a second look. D&D and Yu-Gi-Oh! Synergize surprisingly well, like phenomenally well. So when I'm looking at what dragons in that set can do with dragons from here, I think we could, fan of Yu-Gi-Oh or not, I think we can all get behind the idea that dragons are friggin' awesome.
Yes, and for me, as a casual gamer, not really, we dive a little bit together into some of the D&D board games. Yu-Gi-Oh, I don't really touch at all, but me both neither. Of these sets, I mean, they work so well together. I thought I was going to be all gung-ho about the superhero sets only, and that's it. But no, you are absolutely, absolutely right, Dave. Dragons are awesome.
Yeah, so play with some dragons.
Yep.
Now, don't get burned.
That might all change whenever the DC set comes out. But...
Well, I mean, obviously I'm super excited about the DC set, especially since one of the designers of this game, Michael, assured me that the other two forms of booster gold, they chose a different aspect of the character to model. Not that I have any idea what aspect of the character the common was modeling, but I digress. He will be a different sort of thing, which is great. All right, well, that's enough from us. Thank you so much for listening to us this week. This is Dave.
And this is his wife, Lauren.
And this has been The Reserve Pool. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon.
Rawr.
All right, so your first podcast, what do you think?
I'm going to cry now. No, it was cool.
you did pretty well, I gotta say. There were people who commented on the YouTube videos who were like, Lauren should be on the podcast. So here you are.
They got what they wanted, and now never again, right?
I wouldn't say that necessarily.